Good morning, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Janine Powell, and I'll be leading today's service as our minister Sarah is away this week on a break. And I'd like to welcome you here, first-time visitor, seasoned regular, or wherever you consider yourself to be on the scale, somewhere in between. And as well as podcast listeners who will be listening to this service sometime in the future. I'd like to welcome you all here to Essex Church, home of Kensington Unitarians, where we meet each Sunday and at different times during the week, differing ages, races, genders, sexualities, and economic statuses for our own unique reasons and some reasons that we all share. As we gather on this now sunny Sunday morning, may we be reminded of our highest aspirations and be inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. We're going to sing now as we light our chalice, and we're going to light it in honour of International Women's Day, which is on the 8th of March. And the theme this year is Be Bold for Change. We're going to sing a chant which is number 229 in your hymn books, Rise Up, O Flame. And we'll sing it through together once, and then those who want to can break into a round, and we'll sing it a further four or so times, letting it gently come to an end by repeating the last line. So we'll stay seated for this one. It's number 229. Which might be one that's been told here before, because it's one that I can imagine Sarah telling us. But it's another minister I have to thank for bringing this story to my attention, and as it's one told by the Reverend Sheena Gabriel during my visit to her congregation at Godalming Unitarians last week. So this is the story of Malik Bego and Lalo. Guru Nanak was a very wise guru, and he spent much of his time travelling around visiting villages and towns so that he could teach people about God. He met many different kinds of people, rich and poor, honest and dishonest, humble and self-important, and he talked to them all. Nearing one village, Nanak felt tired and hungry, so he decided to stay for a few days. Lalo, a poor carpenter, invited Nanak to stay at his house, and Nanak was pleased to accept. Now, it just so happens that a rich man named Malik Bego, who lived in the same village, heard that the guru was visiting, and he sent his servants to invite him to come and stay with him instead. He believed that Nanak would rather stay with him than in a poor man's home. "I will give an enormous feast for all the important people in the village," he said, "and Nanak, as my guest of honour, can sit by my side." Many people came to Malik Bego's feast, but Nanak didn't arrive. This made Malik Bego very angry, and he sent his servants to find Nanak. They went straight to Lalo's house, where they found Nanak, and he agreed to go with them and arrived at Malik Bego's home to find a large crowd had gathered. They sensed that something was wrong, and they wanted to know what would happen. Malik Bego met Nanak at the door, and he said, "Why did you refuse to come to my feast? I had cakes and rich food for you, but you preferred to eat coarse bread." Guru Nanak gently smiled and asked for a piece of cake. Then he took a piece of Lalo's coarse bread, which he had. He took it out of his bag, and he squeezed them both. To the surprise of the crowd, drops of milk trickled from the bread, whilst from the cake came drops of blood. Malik Bego shouted, "This is a trick!" But Guru Nanak answered, "This is no trick. Lalo's simple bread was earned by honest work, but your cake and all your wealth was gained by cheating the poor." Malik Bego thought about what Guru Nanak had said, and he felt ashamed of the way that he had lived. And from that day on, he changed his ways and followed the teachings of the Guru. So that's the story of Malik Bego and Lalo. So let's take a moment, maybe looking at those candles and acknowledging the issues that they represent, as we turn inwards in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and love, God of our hearts and of our understanding, be with us now in our reflecting, praying and contemplating the things which affect us. In our world, where inequality for so many people is the norm, help us to do the things that we can to counter those trends, ways of thinking and actions. Where those who struggle to have enough resources may be helped to have their needs met, and where those whose talents aren't judged by what they do, but remunerated through the lens of one's gender. Let there be equality for all. And where people fight and rage over wars fought for so long that some have even forgotten why they fight, may ways be found to address the conflicts so that sustainable solutions can endure. Let us here take a few quiet moments now to send our own thoughts and prayers to those people, even if those people are ourselves, and those situations and places who need it today. And let us also remember and give thanks for the moments of gladness in our lives, the sharing we may have witnessed, the kind words spoken or heard, moments of grace and appreciation, and times of connection and love. So may it be. Amen.
This reading is taken from online blog Financial Highway, which helps educate the public about financial issues. Its author, Miranda, writes about balancing the need for money and not with letting money define you. We all know that money can't buy happiness. However, a certain amount of money is needed for the building blocks of happiness, or at least security. It's quite difficult to be happy when you don't have access to the basic necessities of life. And this is where money and happiness come together a little bit. Even if you are a gardening master, you still need money to purchase food when the produce is out of season. Your plot of land must be bought or rented, and that takes money as well. Some amount of money is necessary to provide for our basic needs. Life is indeed bleak and stressful when basic needs of food, shelter, clothing, and transportation, even to get to work, are not met. If you are frugal and resourceful, you might not need a great deal of money to meet these needs. You can take public transport, buy items on sale, and budget carefully. While money may not be everything, it is certainly something, and security cannot be had without at least enough money to cover the basics. On top of that, a little extra money can make life pleasant. While constantly chasing after money as an end in itself is likely to result only in unhappiness, and having a little extra disposable income can add to one's enjoyment of life. In my opinion, the real problem is fixating on material things and fixating on having more money. There will always be something you don't have. You can always have more stuff, and you can always have more money. Tying your feelings of personal wealth and well-being to money as a status symbol means that you will never be happy because you will never have as much as you could have. Your attitude about money is one of the things that determines whether it contributes for your comfort and quality of life, or whether your desire for it gets out of hand and results in discontent and unhappiness.
The following reading is an extract which speaks of an experience of tithing and is from the book 12 Steps to Spiritual Health, written by David Usher, who was until a few years ago the District Minister for Unitarians in London and the South East. I was introduced to the practice of tithing by a friend. Some years ago, he and I were in a men's group together. Six of us met monthly for a meal and meaningful conversation about work, our relationships and health, our hopes, fears, regrets, and aspirations. He and his wife had practiced tithing for several years, and he had mentioned it in passing a few times in our meetings. He had told us that each month, the first thing that he and his wife did with their combined income, which varied from month to month because of the work they did, was to take 10% of that income and place it in a special account. They did that before they paid the mortgage, or bought food for their three children, or met any of their other usual household expenses and obligations. That money immediately ceased to be theirs. It was money which they could use only for the material benefit of others. Their children were fully aware of this money because at regular intervals the family would meet to discuss to what uses it might be put. I had been aware of this practice of theirs because of his occasional mentions of it, and then I became directly aware of it. I had been sharing with the group the fact that my sister in Australia was coming to the end of her long and brave struggle with cancer. I had been hoping to visit her, but the family finances at the time were such that I could not have possibly afforded the fare. Then one day he called me and asked if we could meet for coffee. He told me he wanted to ask me to do him a favour. Would I please let him pay for my airfare to Australia? He had discussed it with his wife, and they would be pleased and grateful if I would not allow my pride to get in the way of accepting their offer. And so I accepted this generous offer. Sadly, my sister died before I was able to arrange for time off and buy the ticket. But I was able to conduct her memorial service a week or two after her death. And I was very grateful for the gift of being present with my sister's immediate family in their time of sadness. The example of my friends made a profound effect on me. The sincerity and simplicity of their generosity I found very compelling. I had several conversations with them about it after I had returned from Australia. They insisted that they did not want to be paid back. It had been a gift. So instead of paying back, I decided to pay.
I'm going to read some words to you now, which will lead us into a time of shared silence, which will be ended by some music. So you might wish to put down anything you don't need at this point and get comfy in your chairs, or maybe close your eyes if you wish. These words are by Dorothy Day, and she was an activist who worked for such social causes as pacifism and women's suffrage through the prism of the Catholic Church. Known for protesting war, supporting labour strikes, and living voluntarily in poverty as she cared for the needy, Dorothy Day founded the Catholic Workers' Movement. She says, "What we would like to do is change the world. make it a little simpler for people to feed, clothe, and shelter themselves. By fighting for better conditions, by crying out unceasingly for the rights of the workers, the poor, the destitute, we can, to a certain extent, change the world. We can work for the oasis, the little cell of joy and peace in a harried world. We can throw our pebble in the pond and be confident that its ever-widening circle will reach around the world. So let's take that image of ripples. Ripples of those things people and organisations do in trying to help shape a more just system for us all. Their words, deeds, and examples creating an ever widening circle. Let's take that image into our time of silence now.
Oh,
It's all about the money. I say this as a person brought up in a religion which taught me that money was not important, that the only important thing was my spiritual life and health, and even in some ways that being poor was a virtue. I've struggled with the concept of money mentally, emotionally, spiritually and physically. And when Sarah Jane and I met to talk about doing this month's theme of good and evil, one of the first things which came to mind for me was the saying, money is the root of all evil, which maybe some of you are familiar with that saying. So I decided to explore the topic of money in my service. And once I started researching, I wish I'd chosen anything else. Why? Because money is such a loaded, complex, complicated, and sometimes painful topic, which touches on our ideals, beliefs, esteem, ties into culture, the fabric of the makeup of the society in which we live, with gender payment inequality, consumerist society, and an insatiable yearning for more. I think it's a topic that we could spend the whole month looking at. So I'm going to share just a few thoughts here and focus mainly on money in relation to religion. So let's start off with that quote which came to mind for me. Money is the root of all evil. In fact, this saying, which appears in the New Testament, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, is misquoted. And there are slight variations on the wording depending on the edition of the Bible which you read. However, they all state it pretty much the same way as on the front of your order of service, which reads, "For the love of money is a root to all kinds of evil." And it goes on to say, "Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." The love of money being one root to all kinds of bad things or evil doings is different from stating that money itself is the root to evil. For those wanting to live a morally good life, it can be easy for them to view money as bad and want as little to do with it as possible. The Bible contains many stories with advice and views on money, including the telling of the widow's offering from Mark's Gospel, chapter 12, verses 41 to 44, in which a poor widow gave two small coins in the collection, whilst other wealthier people had given more. According to the Bible, Jesus said of this that the widow had given the most, as she'd given all that she had, whereas the wealthy had given what they had to spare. In Simon Hill's book, The Upside Down Bible, What Jesus Really Said About Money, Sex and Violence, he invited people who aren't so familiar with the Bible to read some verses, and then for some of them reading them for the first time, and then to comment on what they had read. Of this verse, some of the commenters expressed concern for the widow being left with nothing, and having given all she had, how was she able then to live, to eat and buy the things that she needed for herself? This act of giving all she had, being held up in the Bible as a moral example of how to live, is something that has unfortunately been exploited by some churches and religious organisations, which another one of the commenters named Jennifer mentioned. She stated, I'm worried about the widow. What is the money for? It feels like a televangelist gouging the faithful. Televangelists extracting money from people who generally can't afford it. For centuries, our connections and relationships with money have shaped our values of it, views of it, and taught us what to do with it. People have looked to different holy books for monetary guidance and how to use it in alignment with their religious beliefs. Professor of Duke University, Lisa Keister, published a study called How Religion Contributes to Wealth and Poverty. Her study of different religious groups in America looked at how their beliefs impacted on their wealth. And this wealth is defined as actual money, income, property, investments, and other things. From doing her study and finding differing levels of wealth amongst different religious groups, she writes, "One of the most fascinating explanations is the direct effect religion can have on orientations towards work and money. Many of the important decisions about family, work, and savings have roots in their religious beliefs." She goes on to give some examples, such as that the type of vocation a person may choose, such as working in the charity or social service sector, may be considered good jobs by their faith. However, these jobs aren't necessarily paid well, so don't make it easy to save and accumulate wealth. And that families who follow religions which advocate for many children and mothers staying at home meant that they were poorer than families in which both parents worked and had fewer children. And also money being viewed as a tool to help the family and community or as something belonging to God affected people's uses and accumulation of wealth. As if viewed as a tool for the family, she found people would more likely have savings, and those whose faith viewed it undesirable to have large amounts of personal savings because they believed that the money belonged to God, they'd have less. And over tea and coffee, you may like to share some of your own religious or spiritual beliefs which have shaped your own relationship with money. In my own research, looking at beliefs and practices religions have in common, there were a couple of things which came up time and time again. The first teaching regards how one earns money, that it is earned in an honest way. And you may remember at the start of the service, I told you the story of Malik Bego, the rich man who wanted Guru Nanak to come to his lavish feast. And when he did, Guru Nanak made blood pour from the food, as Malik Bego's wealth had come from the mistreatment and cheating of the poor. Another teaching in common is about giving away some of your wealth to help others. Here we take a collection on a weekly basis and a monthly charity collection. In Islam, zakat is one of the five pillars, and people give 2.5% of wealth after their expenses. As part of the Sikh faith, people practice daswan, contributing 10% of what they earn. And Jewish tithing is also 10% of wealth. Aside from describing the impact of receiving the gift of tithing by choosing to pay it forward and tithe himself in the extract from David Usher's book, which Brian read, it also examples that giving can be done in many different forms, not only through giving money to religious institutions. Many churches, as well as supermarkets, collect for food banks, while some individuals carefully pick what produce they buy for themselves, choosing to buy fair trade or from farmers' markets only. And for people who don't have much money, volunteering a percentage of their time is an ultimate way that they can help those in need by helping charities which combat poverty. Maybe some of you here give in similar ways. Being able to live well, or being able to live at all, is very much affected by money. As mentioned in the first reading, which Juliet read, money is necessary. Whether you see it as a necessary evil or otherwise, it's an ingrained part of social functioning and our global system. But what causes so much distress and outrage is the great inequality in the distribution of the world's wealth and the world's resources, which are a product of the beliefs and systems around money, which have been held for hundreds and thousands of years. And these beliefs and ideas, which maintain the status quo, not only appear in written form, but also in musical form. All things bright and beautiful, a hymn that many of us know from our school days, was written by Mrs. Cecil Alexander in 1848. And what many of you may not know is that it originally had an extra verse. The words are, "The rich man in his castle, the poor man at his gate, God made them high and lowly, and ordered their estate." Due to endorsing the class system and monetary disparity, this verse was eventually removed, and I'm glad that we don't sing it here. Small things like this, challenging inequality when we see it, whether in written, spoken, or sung forms, can and do have an impact. And whilst there are many rich and wealthy people who donate to charities, even setting up their own charitable foundations, there's still a lot to do on so many levels to bring about lasting changes in creating a more just economic world in which all of its citizens have their needs easily met. So in many ways, it is all about the money. Whilst I can't state if money is bad, good, or neither, and I can't and wouldn't want to tell people how much money they should have or what they should do with it, I do think it's up to all of us to decide for ourselves what kind of world we want to live in. A world where there's enough and everyone can access it to meet their needs, or a world where there's enough but only a few have and most go without. For me, I definitely know which world I hope one day we will all live in. So may it be. Amen. As we draw our service to a close, I'd like to leave you with these words by Gary Kowalski. "Gathered in our varied faiths, we give thanks for the blessings of world community as we share our common dream, homes and schools where children thrive, neighbourhoods that are safe and clean, a city rich in colours and cultures, an economy where no one is expendable, a beloved community where rich and poor alike have access to the opportunity for a dignified and productive life. Churches, mosques, synagogues and temples, where our deepest hope is to be of service to a hurting world. Enable us as we leave this place to carry forth this prayer into the coming week, turning our thoughts towards charity, our hearts towards justice, and our hands towards the work of peace. May you all go in peace, and blessed be. Amen.